Welcome to Nevada Newsmakers. On the broadcast today, Dr. Vince Lombardi with the Nevada Center for Biomedical Research, plus on the Power Pundit panel, Connie McMullen, Trey Abney, and Eric Herzig. It's all coming up next on an all-new Nevada Newsmakers.
Early in the morning or throughout the night, professional truck drivers are on the job, serving you, safely moving freight that's crucial to our economy. From the oldest industries to our newest innovators, from the exotic to the everyday, trucks are everywhere, moving everything. Never afraid to embrace a future that makes Nevada and our nation stronger. Trucking moves America forward.
How do you shed some light on a better economy? Start with growth inspired by Valley Electric Association. We're a member-owned power company that puts Nevada first, and we're doing big things, like providing prosperity by securing renewable energy projects. For Nevada, that means more jobs and more opportunities, all for a strong statewide economy. In other words, together, we're doing powerful things. Visit us at vea.coop to learn more.
Nevada Newsmakers is brought to you in part by the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center, Pro Group Management, and the Retail Association of Nevada.
This is Nevada Newsmakers with host Sam Shad, a no-holds-barred political forum. Now, from the Nevada Newsmakers broadcast headquarters, here is Sam Shad.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we're pleased to welcome back to the program Dr. Vince Lombardi. He's with the Nevada Center for Biomedical Research. Pleasure to have you back on the program, sir.
The pleasure is mine. Thank you, Sam.
Before we get started, I want to talk about the fundraiser that's coming up on the 18th of August. And it's being held at the Grove in South Reno. And it's going to go toward helping funding this amazing project that we've been following for so many years now. And the cost is $60 per person, or if you have a party of six, it's $300. And it's going to be wine, food, entertainment, and a good time. And I will be there. You will be there.
It's always a good time. The event has always been fun. So.
And this is the organization headed up by Annette Winnemore, and we're very excited to be a part of it. But I want to get into talking to you about some of the research that you're doing. One of the things that you're involved in is cutting-edge technology regarding biomarkers. Would you explain a little bit about that in English so we can all understand?
You bet. Well, to start with, our disease, ME-CFS, that we work with...
And that would be chronic fatigue syndrome.
Right. The acronym is ME is myelogenic encephalomyelitis, or the less common, or actually the original name, which is kind of being phased out, is chronic fatigue syndrome. In most diseases, they have a typical diagnostic you can take, and that says, yes, you have the disease definitively. ME-CFS is more of a disease of exclusion, and that's hindered the research quite a bit, and it's also a significant health burden because if it's a disease of exclusion, that means you have to rule out every other thing before you can get a diagnosis, which is very expensive. So one of the most important areas of research is trying to come up with a really good, solid biomarker where we can just do a diagnostic and say, yes, you have the disease. Not only does that help be able for the physicians to diagnose the patients, it also helps for the research because that way we have a real good, solid way of saying, yes, these people all fit the same criteria and people who were using as controls don't. So the work we're doing in collaboration with Arizona State University, the Stephen Johnston at the Biodesign Institute, is using something called a random peptide array. So what a random peptide array is, it's basically a silicon wafer where 100 plus thousand spots have very short protein sequences. And those protein sequences are generated randomly by random shuffling of amino acids. We know what the sequences are, and they're all the same, but they don't necessarily represent anything in the real world. But just by random chance, they do end up being close to something in the real world. So what we do is we take serum from blood, spot it on these arrays, and antibodies, the part of your humoral immune system, binds these peptide arrays and certain spots, and based on what the signature is on how those antibodies bind to those spots is very diagnostic of the disease. So we've recently published a paper where we can show that with very high sensitivity and specificity, we can identify ME-CFS cases from controls. And now our next step is to show that we can use the same technology to distinguish ME-CSF from closely related diseases to show that it really is specific.
Oh, okay. So, how many people are being shown to be diagnosed with this? I mean,
well, so far our initial study we looked at in order to make it to show we can have a general diagnostic that doesn't limit itself by geographic boundaries. We started with a group of ME-CFS cases. I think we used 20 cases from the U.S. and 20 cases from Europe, and equal amounts of controls. And based on that signature, we also have another group in Canada that had kind of the same idea a little bit after the fact, and they sent samples to Arizona State University, and ironically, using our signature, Arizona State was able to accurately pick the Canadian group very accurately. So the fact that we developed the signature using people from the U.S. and from Europe, and that signature could diagnose the people from Canada, is really tells a lot about the efficacy of the signature.
Well, and it's interesting, too, because, you know, with a lot of diseases, there are different parts of the world that show up in different ways.
Oh,
you know,
absolutely.
Alzheimer's disease, for example, they're finding in Central America that there's an area where people are almost guaranteed to get Alzheimer's disease, and they're trying to study these people to understand what it is and see if they can find, again, some kind of biomarker that they can alter, or a gene that they can alter.
And actually, the same technology, the folks at Arizona State University use the same technology to come up with a diagnostic for Alzheimer's, and it worked quite well. When you look at the peptides in the signature, and you look to see if any of those peptides match the known proteins that are involved in Alzheimer's, which are stereotypically the beta amyloid and the tau protein, there are some homologies to those proteins. So the signature
homologies.
Homology basically means that those sequences are similar if you just look at the actual amino acid code or amino acid sequence.
Now, is this a major breakthrough in the sense that, I mean, a decade ago, when people talked about CFS, a lot of doctors were like, well, it's all in your mind. Are you now able to prove conclusively that this is real?
Well, I think that moving the science forward like this is, what really we're doing is tying an organic basis to the disease. So for a long time, people said, well, this is just a psychosomatic disease. It's all in your head. But there was research early on to suggest that it really had an organic basis. There was a number of studies. They looked at things like inflammatory cytokines. Those are signaling molecules in your blood that are activated during the course of inflammation. And so, for a long time, we've known that ME-CFS had an inflammatory component. It's been getting a lot more acceptance now because there's a lot of groups from very prestigious universities. For instance, Ian Lipkin at Columbia, and now there's a gentleman at Stanford. Who is involved? So when you get some of the bigger players involved, and they're basically kind of confirming what's been done already. My collaborator at the center, Dr. Demerlier, published a paper some years ago showing that the bacteria in the gut is different between cases of concurrent controls. That paper didn't get a lot of press, but now a group at Cornell has done the same thing. Now everybody is saying, "Wow, this is really a real disease." But I mean, although the work was done before, when you get people with a big reputation, it really helps the disease a lot. And so right now, I think it's the general belief that it really has an organic basis. And I have a colleague at University of California, San Diego, Bob Navio, who just did a really seminal paper showing that there's absolute differences in the metabolomic profile of ME-CFS patients compared to controls. And so that paper has been highlighted in some real high-level just mainstream papers showing the disease does have an organic basis.
Okay, so what's the next step then, now that we're getting concurrence here?
Well, for our biological signature, of course, we want to extend it. There's two things that we need to do. The first thing is that we need to show that we have the ability to diagnose, say, separate someone like some ME-CFS from, say, somebody who has MS or somebody who has lupus or things like that. And that's what we're working on now. The second thing is that because these are random peptides, we don't 100% know what they represent in the real world. And so we're working on that, because once you know that, you can kind of get an idea of the underpinnings of the disease. You know, for instance, if you were infected with, say, smallpox, or if you're infected with influenza, you should be able to find antibodies in your blood to those viruses. And so we've identified that in ME-CFS patients, they do have antibodies that distinguish them from healthy controls. And so what we have to do is figure out what those antibodies are recognizing in the body, or if it's a pathogen or whatnot.
No small task.
And it's a really difficult task, because if you think about it, if you were to do a search in the government websites that have lists of all these proteins, there are literally billions and billions of possible combinations that can lead to these things.
All right, let's take a break. More with Dr. Vince Lombardi. We'll be right back.
Sully's Sports Bar inside the Tamarack Junction is South Reno's headquarters for locals to watch all your favorite sports. And now you can enjoy your favorite team on our brand new high-def TVs featuring the Papa, the big daddy of them all. It's our giant 17-foot big screen TV wall. And we have two 79-inch high-def TVs, 12 65-inch high-def TVs, including two party booths for your own private party, and six high-def private booth TVs. Bring in your own headphones and listen to your favorite game right from your own seat. First, make your bets in our William Hill Sportsbook, then enjoy your favorite cold beer, libations, burgers, wings, pizza, and our signature build-your-own Bloody Mary bar. Then settle in and download our app and listen to any game being shown in Sully's Sports Bar. Catch your favorite team on our new high-def big-screen TVs. Sully's Sports Bar is the only place to watch your favorite sports all year long. The Tamarack Junction, just north of the Summit Mall in South Virginia.
It's Tamarack Junction, your junction for fun.
St. Ives Florist, for every holiday and every special occasion. For romance. Custom home design. We have the largest selection of fresh flowers in Northern Nevada. And we also offer a large selection of unique gift items. Come see me, Lori Ann, at St. Ives Florist, 700 South Wells Avenue, or call me at 333-9190.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with Dr. Vince Lombardi. He's with the Nevada Center for Biomedical Research, and they're having a big fundraiser coming up this Friday, the 18th of August, at the Grove in South Reno. And it's going to be a fun event. I'll be there. Annette Winnemore, who heads up the center, will be there. And there'll be food, drink. It's going to be a very fun evening. $60 per person to get in. If you have a party of six, you can get in for $300. So a significant saving there. It goes from 6 to 9 p.m. One of the other projects that you're working on, you brought this up a little bit, but maybe you could give us some more detail, was I'm not going to be able to say the word.
Okay, we're looking interested in looking at the gut component of the disease.
That's exactly it. Okay. So. You know, explain what's going on there.
Okay, so for instance, it's good to put this in perspective. Most people don't appreciate that your gastrointestinal tract is your largest immune organ in your body. If you were to take your entire gastrointestinal tract and flatten it out, it'd probably cover the area of a football field. It's that big.
Because really? I've heard that, but that's really amazing.
It's very innovative. It's very, very innovative. The cells inside the GI tract, they create these things called microvilli, and they fold back and forth. So even though it's a small area inside your body, if you were to flatten it out and actually look at the surface area, it's quite large. And so, therefore, and not to mention the fact that pretty much most of our interaction with the environment occurs in our digestive tract. So we have this amazing component in our body where we have bacteria living inside us. They're within a couple cell layers of being from our bloodstream and becoming septic, but yet our body can maintain that bacteria. That bacteria, in most respects, does good stuff for us. If that system is compromised, though, of course, it can be involved in disease. And there's been a number of diseases recently that have been identified to have a GI component. And right now, the concept of what they call the gut microbiome, which is the ecosystem of bacteria that lives in our gut, has become kind of all the rage in research right now. And they're really associating that with a lot of diseases, you know, compromised gut microbiome. That's been shown to be different when you look at ME/CFS cases and controls.
Okay, in what way?
Well, for instance, if you look at just the general diversity. So one of the ways they look at this is they don't identify every single type of bacteria, but they look for general families. So when you look at the big picture of how many families represent the gut of ME/CFS cases, it's lower than in healthy people. So basically the diversity is lower. That's one thing.
All right, and that's where we got to leave it. It's a fascinating topic. I've been involved. I'm a board member for many years now. And as I said earlier, we're going to have a big fundraiser on the 18th. It's going to be at the Grove in South Reno. at $60 per person. It's a great cause, but it's also a great event. It runs from 6 to 9. If you need more information, just go ahead and Google Nevada Center for Biomedical Research, and all the information is there. Thank you so much for being here, Vince.
Always a pleasure, Sam.
Thank you. Bye-bye now.
Hi, my name's Marilyn Miner, and I'm sure you'd agree that Nevada's a very special place to live. I was born here, and my husband and I have raised our family here. I feel it's a privilege to live and work in the Truckee Meadows. I especially enjoy helping my clients reach their real estate goals. Sometimes the smallest details provide the greatest satisfaction. I'd be complimented to talk to you about your next move.
Call Marilyn Miner at Dixon Realty, 742-1280, or log on to marilynminer.com.
The signs and symptoms of cataracts can start out small with subtle changes in your vision. So don't wait. Be proactive and take your vision into your own hands. If you're experiencing the onset of cataracts or just have questions, contact your eye care professional or call Eye Care Associates of Nevada today. Dr. Hiss has years of experience specializing in the surgical correction of eye disorders and has completed over 84,000 vision-correcting procedures. At Eye Care Associates of Nevada, we'll change the way you look at the world.
Nevada Newsmakers is brought to you in part by the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center, Pro Group Management, and the Retail Association of Nevada.
And now, back to Nevada Newsmakers with Sam Shad.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we have a great PowerPundit panel. As always, Connie McMullen is here. She's the publisher of Senior Spectrum Magazine and Boomer Magazine, along with Trey Abney, Director of Government Relations for the Chamber, and Eric Herzig, Political Science Professor of UNR. And in our previous program, the whole show was devoted to Chris Giunchigliani, better known as Chris G, who's a Clark County Commissioner, and certainly looks like she's going to run for governor. That would bring up an interesting primary between the heavily funded Steve Sisolak, who's also on the Clark County Commission, but has 2 more years, as she pointed out, to go, so he could potentially raise up a lot more money being in that position. What do you think of that kind of race?
I think it makes the Republicans very happy. You would have two Democrats that would draw different parts of the Democratic Party. It would draw in a lot of money. It would show a split that's in the Democratic Party. Sisolak doesn't resonate well with the more liberal wing. And if I'm the Republicans, it's like, you're making my day.
It's interesting because, Chris G is definitely somebody who leans to the left side of the spectrum. And Steve Sisolak is more of a businessman, sort of centrist Democrat. How do you think that would play?
Well, I liken it to the 06 race between Dena Titus and Jim Gibson, right? Jim Gibson was the moderate guy, the moderate approach. Dena Titus certainly more left. And certainly, so she took that race, that primary, the base of the party supported Dena Titus. And then she had a more difficult time, of course, against Jim Gibbons, at the last month of that campaign, and a campaign of which I was heavily involved, by the way, had scandal after scandal after scandal, and he still beat her. And so you're going to have that same kind of situation set up, I think. If Chris G jumps in, it's going to be very hard for for Steve Sisolak to make inroads with the base of that party.
Now, there was a debate on Nevada Newsmakers back in the day in that race between Jim Gibson and Dena Titus. And I got to say that Dena Titus beat Jim Gibson like a baby seal. I mean, it was unbelievable, the ferocity. And Chris G is no shrinking violet, right?
Oh, she's very aggressive, very well-spoken, does her homework. She's knowledgeable. And Jim Gibson was a very soft-spoken man. I didn't know him very well, but he didn't strike me as being the tiger that she is.
He walked out of the studio just shaking his head. It was pretty amazing. Some of the points that she raised on the program: increased funding for mental health, dealing with the opioid crisis, housing conditions in the state, need for affordable housing. It sounded like a lot of things that we're going to need money. Do you think that Nevada is ready to see any increase in taxes in the next session from the next governor?
No.
But then do they ever?
I was just going to say almost exactly that. It's like, that's an easy one to answer. Nevadans never want more taxes. The legislature will have at least a third, if not close to 40%. They'll just say absolutely not, and we'll dig in their heels. And they've got the Gibbons Tax Restraint Initiative on their side. I think that's going to be a heavy lift.
Well, and recent history has shown that you need a Republican governor, apparently, yep, to raise taxes. And so that might be telling.
You know, one of the things that she brought up, as I mentioned, was affordable housing. And that is, you know, really becoming a major problem in northern Nevada in particular. We're seeing huge increases in value of homes already because there's nowhere for people to live.
Well, that's exactly right. And we can't build apartments and houses fast enough. And EDON is being so successful at bringing people in here that we don't have the room for them. I mean, forget about skill sets. And we're not talking about a shortage of engineers and PhDs here. I've got chamber members that can't find people to answer the phones at their front desk. You know, you've got hotel properties here that have, you know, 40 open house cleaning positions. And so it is getting acute. And you can't afford the people that those in those type of jobs can't afford to buy homes at that price anyway. And so now the argument is, you know, they're building a lot of high-end homes and in order for people to move out of the lower-end homes to make room. I don't know what the answer is.
One of the things that I heard last week from a pretty reliable source was that somebody high up in Lyon County was saying that they don't want housing there. If Story County's not going to have housing, they don't want housing. That potentially is a huge crisis.
How can they say that? It's like if you've ever been out to USA Parkway, that is pandemonium. I mean, there are so many people moving out there that RTC is busing them with a special bus. So there has to be a place, and they're going to get the hugest overflow of the population growth out there. That's crazy. And back to what Trey was saying, the average rent in Reno for an apartment, one bedroom, is $1,100 a month. Nobody can afford that. That's low income. Nobody, especially fixed income.
All right. So can you do this through the counties, through planning? Raising fees. You know, the mayor was on the program a week or so ago talking about builders being willing to pay fees towards affordable housing. Do you see that actually happening?
It could. I mean,
you don't sound optimistic. maybe you've been around a little too long.
We've seen this movie before, and you're also seeing delays because there will be fights over, well, what type of housing, in what spot. And you know, if a county commissioner out in Lyon County is saying, we don't want housing, that's a barrier right there. You've got...
It wasn't a commissioner. Oh. It was a member of staff, a senior member of staff.
Oh, okay. And then you've got, say, in this last city council meeting, a fight over, are we going to go back to the drawing board to look at various land use issues? And so the governmental entities are really not pulling as hard as they could on this issue.
Trey?
Well, I mean, you could talk about raising fees. That's not going to make houses cheaper for people. And so you can raise fees on builders for them apparently incentivize them to build affordable housing, but they're going to make up that money somewhere, and that's going to be on the non-affordable housing that they're building. So I know government wants to try to fix things all the time, and sometimes the market, and then we'll have another crash, and then it'll correct itself again, and it'll go over and over. But it's a very difficult problem. But you have a lot of housing advocates say, well, just build more affordable housing. People that have never built houses before ever, just telling builders to build stuff, you know. And the builders are still nervous because they got it. They took it in the shorts in 07, 08, and they're not going to do that again.
Well, they can't build it if they can't get enough people here. The construction industry took a dive. There's not the materials are going up. There's not enough people to hire. And plus, I mean, they should have done this 2 years ago. We're so backed up that it's going to be another 2 to 3 years before it even gets going.
And that's where we have to leave it. And you all point out a very real crisis in housing in Ducky Meadows. And for people who own their own homes right now and are looking at the value rising each month on Zillow, as Trey said, it will come back to earth. All right, that's where we're going to leave it. Thank you all very much. We'll be right back.
Nearly 200,000 Nevadans work in retail businesses, supporting families and the community. Nevada's retail businesses generated over $2 billion in sales tax revenue in 1 year, including nearly $700 million to help our schools. Shop around and see all that Nevada's retailers offer our state.
We're the Retail Association of Nevada, representing thousands of Nevada businesses.
Businesses that work for Nevada.
Take a look at Pro Group Management and see how your workers' comp requirements can be met head-on. By taking a proactive approach, Pro Group can assure that your company is meeting or exceeding state and federal standards. As you move forward in your industry, Pro Group moves with you, simplifying regulatory tasks, clearing the way so you can get the job done, and look to your future success. Pro Group Management. Workers' comp that works for you.
On our next broadcast, Danny Tarkanian joins us. We'll see you then.